brother or sister. In 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, there's the whole Jerusalem poor fund. And you can trace these same seven principles that we find in Deuteronomy 15. We won't take the time now, but they're all there. And Paul says there we need to give as a cheerful giver, not under compulsion or of necessity. Because when we give begrudgingly, when we give with a grieving or broken heart, we now create a second problem for the person in need. Not only do they have the original need, but now they have the problem that of our obvious reluctance to help with a loving heart. Verse 10, we are to give by faith. Give to him freely, and your heart shall not be grudging when you give to him. Because for this, Yahweh your God will bless you. You give by faith and you trust. And I trust that Yahweh will bless us in our giving. So God is asking us to do the giving and the doing to the need in the realm of faith, as we've been seeing all week, not in the realm of surplus. You give, he says, and I will bless you. Trust me that I will take care of you if you are laying down your life to help others. So you see, it's not from surplus that we give, because if it is, and it's not from godly love, then it's human love, and it's not glorifying to God. Verse 11 provides further insight into the troubles or challenges faced by those in need, because it says, for the poor will never cease out of the land. Therefore, I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy, and to the poor in the land. And the word poor there in verse 11 is different from the previous poors in verses 4, 7, and 9. Earlier, it meant the destitute. Here, the word means to be depressed in mind or circumstance. And you see, it shows that those who are in need have two battles that they're fighting. And for any of us that have ever been in need, we know what those two battles are. Not only is it what we're lacking, what we're in need of, but also is the accompanying depression, the discouragement that comes when we find ourselves in a situation and we think to ourselves, you know, it's bad today. It's going to be worse tomorrow. And then next week, it's going to be worse even still. And a year from now, it's going to be worse than it already is, and I'm already feeling terrible about the situation. And our mind starts to think that way, and that which we are in need of can now add depression to our situation, and it's a difficult, difficult circumstance to be in. And Moses is telling us that if we will give to that need, not only will we be able to give to the first problem, but we can also ward off the depression or the discouragement that so often accompanies situations where we're in need. And do you see, if a brother or sister is in need, and we're giving from our surplus, we're giving from our excess, it is not going to be sufficient. You don't help despair or discouragement or depression by giving from surplus. You lay down your life for your brother or sister so that they can see that you have put your interests aside and you have put their interests as being more important than yours. And all of a sudden, the idea that next week is going to be worse than this week, that starts to fade away. Imagine the encouragement that Ruth would have brought to Naomi. Naomi is going back to a difficult way of life. But all of a sudden she finds out she's not going back alone. So it isn't despair and discouragement that Naomi ends up in Israel with. She now has someone that Boaz says is a great example of faith to all in Israel. So we can be that kind of encouragement to one another if we will give even to the laying down of our life for one another when we find a brother or sister in need. We're now going to change gears. Take a deep breath. We're going to look at what the Bible warns the final generation. Because Christ has a specific warning for those of us living in the last generation. We know from the gospel accounts that Christ said, all of the evil of Lot's day is going to be combined with all of the evil of Noah's day. And it's going to be converged into a single society such as the world has never seen. We are not living in days of evilness that the world has always seen. That is not an accurate statement that it's always been this bad. Bible prophecy tells us that it's worse now than it's ever been. And if the Lord remains away, it's only going to get worse because the evil of Noah and the evil of Lot's day are going to be allowed to flourish. And that's the generation that we're living in. And that's the generation that we're trying to raise our kids in to grow up, to love God, and to love the truth. And you see why in Matthew 24, Christ said, as iniquity increases or abounds, the love of many will grow cold. Now, is that human love? Is he talking about the world? Or is that godly love? And we know that human love doesn't grow cold in the face of iniquity. Human love abounds. It grows in the face of iniquity. Proof? Look at what's happened just in the recent years. The world is redefining its moral code right before our eyes. It's redefining what love is. And it's doing it in a genuine and a sincere fashion. They now, the world now, really, genuinely believes that love is to treat people whom the Bible condemns, to treat these people with love and compassion. And the world feels, by redefining who it considers to be in the circle to be loved, they think they have a better definition of love than God himself. So homosexuals are not to be condemned. They're to be understood. We're to show compassion to them, as just one example. And the world has redefined what love is. And it is now to include that group of people. And you can go through the list of Romans 1. And you can see the examples in Romans 1 all taking place in society today. And society is redefining how it views love. And the reason is they haven't abandoned the concept of love altogether. They still place high importance on loving your neighbor as yourself. So anything you do that hurts your neighbor falls outside of society's definition of love. But that's all they have is their definition of love. They have taken the first commandment regarding loving God, and they have dismissed that entirely. So that we are left with a world today that is teaching our young people, and it would appeal to us, that as long as you're treating your neighbor as you would like to be treated, that's okay. And do you see why evil is allowed to surge under those conditions? And it's all done in the name of love. They would come here and condemn us for standing up for God's word, society would, because they don't have the first commandment and their book of morals any longer. We need to learn how men like Noah overcame the wickedness of his day, how he saved his family from it by condemning the world, Hebrews 11 says, not by making peace with it. He didn't just condemn the world in words, he condemned it in his actions, and by his preaching. And we need to maintain a mental vexation that Lot did, so that when he heard and saw the evil of his day, Peter says he was mentally vexed. The New King James Version says his righteous soul was tormented by the unlawful deeds that he saw taking place in his life. That's the outlook we need to retain. That's the outlook our families need to retain, our ecclesias need to retain, if we are to survive these last evil days. Because it's not human love that grows cold in the presence of iniquity. It's godly love that grows cold in the presence of iniquity. So if I am, on the one hand, allowing the iniquity of the world into my life, and then on the other hand, I leave this place and try to have godly love strengthened in my life, that is an impossible situation. If we are committing ourselves to godly love, we must stop the iniquity in our life. It's no more complicated than as iniquity rises, love grows cold. And as society degenerates, we put the pieces together. Christ is telling us, the last generation, that we are going to live in a world that is more evil than the world has ever seen. And that as iniquity increases, the love of many will grow cold. So be on guard, is what he's telling the last generation. Because the Lord is telling us we're going to live in a society that will challenge our love. It's not false doctrine that we're losing brethren and sisters to. It's not the immortal soul, heaven and hell, the devil, the Trinity, that our young people are finding so attractive out in the world. It's the iniquity that is increasing, that Christ warned us about. So to the last generation, he tells us there's going to be a surge in prosperity, and there's going to be an explosion of evil. And according to the parable in Luke 18, when the Lord comes, will he find thee faith on the earth? There's going to be spiritual complacency. And so he told us the parable so that we would continue to ask for his involvement in our life. So you put the pieces together, the explosion of evil and the increase in prosperity and the spiritual complacency, the love, the godly love, growing cold. And there's a tremendous warning for each of us in those prophecies. It's no different than the book of Revelation has told us. The book that was written for us, for those that have come since the time of Christ. For hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, the believers were asked to remain faithful under physical persecution. For 1,260 years, we know that the great apostate system made war on the saints. That is not the warning to the last generation. We know from Revelation 16, at the time of the Battle of Armageddon, Christ is not saying, beware of an apostate system that will physically persecute you. Christ is saying, I'm coming as a thief. If we went back to the community of believers in the 14th and 15th and 16th centuries, you didn't have to warn them about the Lord coming as a thief. They were on guard incessantly because their belief constantly put them at risk with the authorities. But when we live in a time of complacency, that's when the thief can come in. And he warns us that we lose our garments, the garments of righteousness, of right actions, as Brother Thomas described them in Revelation 19. What causes a believer to lose his garment of right actions? What causes him to lose it is when he's living in a world filled with iniquity. That's the danger that Revelation tells us that we as the last generation are living in. And we have to be on our guard and watch, because the iniquity will lull us to sleep. We'll get used to it. Our righteous souls will no longer be vexed by it. And little by little, it will make inroads into our life, into the aspects of ecclesial life. And the result is our godly love will grow cold. There's great wisdom in God permitting the evil to flourish in our generation. Just as there was great wisdom, there really was wisdom in allowing this great apostate system to have that kind of control for that long over the lives of the believers. The believers had no doubt in their mind what was right and what was wrong. And this great apostate system that would persecute them drove home simply and clearly in their minds the way of wickedness and the way of righteousness. God puts us in the last generation when iniquity is flourishing. And he says, I do it because I want you to see iniquity for what it is. It is going to get so bad, he says, that it ought to be absolutely clear to each one of us what is righteousness and what is wickedness. He doesn't leave us alone, because along with this iniquity, as was covered in one of the classes this morning, there is current event after current event after current event of the signs that are telling us the return of Christ is at the door. So we have the political Bible prophecy that says Jesus is coming. The example I like to use is that Gog and Magog sat down and had Christmas dinner together last year. That's how close we are. When the Emperor of Germany, the Chancellor, and the leader of Russia, Putin, sat down to a Christmas dinner last December 25th, according to the Greek Orthodox calendar. That's how close we are, brethren and sisters. And in all the other events that were covered this morning, Christ is right at the door. God has given us all of these current events to show us. But at the same time, he's asking us to remain faithful and for our love not to grow cold in these last days. It's critically important that we who are living in the last generation, in our ecclesias, in our families, take a strong stand against the evil. That we expose it and we repudiate it, and we maintain a clear line of distinction, a clear line of separation. We have a marvelous radar system in our community, a marvelous radar system to detect false doctrine. I like to use the analogy that if any of the three brethren this week have spoken wrong doctrine, it will beat us home, I guarantee it, especially with email, because we have such a massive defensive structure on wrong doctrine, as we should. We need that defensive mechanism on wrong doctrine. We need to be able to nip false doctrine in the bud because of the devastating impact it has. We have no such radar system for the influx of immorality into our lives. So that radar system needs to live in each home, in each ecclesia, where each person, each member of the body says, if I allow that iniquity into my life, this body is going to suffer. And out of godly love, laying down my life for my brethren and sisters, putting their spiritual interests before my own, I will keep the iniquity of this world out of my life. That's what godly love can do for us. That's the power of godly love over sin. In 2 Timothy 4, to conclude our remarks, Paul loved to the end, just as Christ had. He laid down his life in verse 6. He was about to be offered, about to be sacrificed for the sake of others. The crown of righteousness that was laid up for him at the appearing of Christ, that's what he hoped for. That's what he had his faith in. That's what he loved. By faith, hope, and love, we can keep our garments pure because we are not of darkness. We have the gospel light.